The following podcast contains language that is not suitable for everybody.
This week on Super Skull, your very rehearsed crew gives you their big picks for the week. Nick and I break down Time Stories, one of our favorite new games, and Curtis gives us more insight into the retail of comic shops. I'm just the kind who will break your heart. You do the woo one more time?
Woo!
Wes, Jim West, Desperado, Rough Rider, no, you don't got nada, none of this, brother, this six gun in this buffalo.
Oh my God.
I don't know.
Oh, it's viciously bad.
Get out of that dress when you meet Jim West.
Oh.
The banality of it is offensive.
It's just, they're just the worst. All right.
I think Will Smith and I would get along.
Are we? All righty. Welcome to the Super Skull, your weekly new comic day audio digest from Vault of Midnight, Earth's finest comic books and stuff since 1996. My name is Nick Wybar.
And my name is Curtis Sullivan.
And I'm Marcus Schwimmer.
This is when heroes are made, gentlemen.
We are digging deep and we are here for you,
this
listeners.
This is what separates adults from babies.
Nick, what is going on today that is making us dig so deep?
We already recorded a podcast today.
We did. We certainly did.
And we lost the whole thing due to technical difficulties.
Oh, that's what happened?
Yeah, and that's why we're here again, doing the same thing again.
I was so ready to go home and get my blankie on.
I just want to say, the first recording, best podcast ever?
Oh, it was
I don't know. It was so good.
You guys are missing out.
Yeah,
it was a
great.
Really special. Marcus cried at one point.
I legitimately got teary-eyed, yeah.
So this is not the greatest podcast ever. This is a tribute.
It's in tribute to it.
Okay.
That's right. We had a great bit about how old Curtis is.
We did.
It was a recurring bit throughout the podcast. Yeah. We just kept talking about how old he was.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was so funny.
Yeah. What we're going to do is we're going to pick up the energy.
Yeah.
And we're going to make this podcast just as darn good as we can.
Because it was looking dark. The clouds were forming.
We had a serious conversation.
At that moment, it was like, do we just quit this
forever.
Podcast forever? And just not do it?
Yeah. And I should say that while we're here yapping and saying that we're digging deep, a big credit goes out to Rachel Polk, our producer, because she's right here with us.
She's sticking with us.
Yep.
It's the Super Skulls, all four of us in it together.
That's
you know
right.
What was cool today? We were walking into the studio,
yeah.
And somebody was like, hey, it's the Super Skulls.
Yeah, that's us.
They did say that.
And I'd never heard that before, and I liked it.
I loved it.
How did he know?
I don't know how he did know.
That was awesome.
He broke the mystery of radio.
We actually have a great podcast for you today. We're going to talk about so many things. We're going to rehash the citizen question from last week because now we have Curtis Caviar and Asses Sullivan back with us.
Yes, with my millennia of experience.
With all of your years.
Yes.
It would be weird to not take advantage of all that wisdom.
That's right.
You're like an old tree.
Yes. If you cut me in half... There'd be like a lot of rings.
Like a lot of rings like and
when you,
pulp.
When you get it through all the blood.
Yeah.
Then you'd be like, this is some rings.
What else are we doing? We had a great board game review, Time Stories.
And we're going to do it all over again.
What else are we doing today?
Go ahead.
I was going to say the classics, right? We got big picks.
We got our big picks.
We got the poll box.
We got the poll box.
Rumor is there's a You're an Asshole segment.
Oh, it's coming back.
Oh, and the never requested... segment from the listener, You're an Asshole,
That's right.
Is going to make another appearance.
Whenever I think about You're an Asshole, I think about how I spelled it wrong that one time on the board.
That's right.
Back oh, yeah.
Yeah, we used to your hang on the board.
Y-O-U-R.
An Asshole.
That's what I remember, too. Hey, so I think we should dive in, but before we go any further, Rachel Polk, how are we feeling? Are we recording?
Everything is good to go.
Everything's good to go?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I'm glad everything's good to go because, Nick, I am going to go first this week.
Hit
again.
Me. What do you got?
Image Comics, number one, Black Magic by Greg Rucka and Nicholas Scott.
Ooh.
Ooh, that sounds interesting. Tell me about it as if I've never heard about it before.
You bet. I'm here for you, bud. So, this comic is about a witch.
Mm.
A witch who lives in the East Coast of the United States. At night, she performs witchcraft.
New England?
We think.
East Coast, probably.
Yeah, yeah. At night, she performs witchcraft with her coven.
Mm-hmm.
But by day, she's a detective, Detective Black.
Witch by night, cop by day.
So let me stop you right there. Sometimes when I think of like a coven of witches, I think only ladies.
No, this coven is both of witches and warlocks, wizards. The male version is very confusing because I feel like it could go both ways.
Yeah,
a mitch.
So we got witches and mitches. And it starts out, and we don't really know what time period we're in. And there's a meeting of the coven on the fall equinox in a dark forest. And everything's going just
spookily.
And then Detective Black's got to get to work because there's a hostage situation.
Her cell phone rings.
Your cell phone rings. And that,
it's like podcasting with Marcus.
Kind of.
That's so true. I'd have no rebuttal.
But with less sacrifice.
and she's off to a hostage situation, and the person who's taking the hostages demands only to speak to her.
Yeah.
And we go on this awesome detective story from there. But it's all rooted in the fact that we know that just like an hour before, this lady was in the woods performing some kind of witchcraft ceremony.
So there's something supernatural going on.
Totally.
Then there's something very real going on in the form of a hostage situation.
That's right. Greg Rucka's writing on this. The dude's a master of his craft, and he shows it with black magic.
Greg Rucka can write some crime.
Yeah, and he's doing it.
That's true.
He's really good at that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this comic is black and white. And normally, I would be a little eh on that.
Well, let's say it's not just black and white. It's gray tones.
Yeah, it's got a lot of gray tones. That's right.
So it is colored, but it's interesting.
Totally void of the Grayson effect, this book. Totally void of the Grayson effect.
Yeah.
Well, it's gray, son.
Oh, that was really good.
Yeah, we can just keep going.
That was great. We didn't even do that the first time we did this.
This is why I think we should do every podcast twice.
Twice, yeah.
Oh, yes.
But this book is full of great storytelling. The art is wonderful. And I am a sucker for stories that involve witchcraft that take place in the East Coast of the United States.
We called it maybe a year ago on this podcast, Witches. The New Zombies.
Totally true.
Yep.
You think that's going to be the thing?
Just so many witches.
And yeah. I really enjoyed this book. And there's like a lot of symbolism going on. We were talking about her badge number on the cover, just her holding her badge, and she's got fire in the background, which is super dramatic. But her badge number is 0333. Mm-hmm. And my brain right now is tuned into clues, and we'll get to that in the board game corner. But there's a lot of clues going on in this book, and there's a lot of things that give you just little bits of information about her life. And it was so much fun.
It's a hell of a first issue.
Every once in a while, you read a comic, and you have to remind yourself to slow down because you just want to see what happens because the storytelling is so good.
You read. You don't look as much.
That's right. Yeah. And I had to do that. I had to tell myself to slow down with this book because I was so into it. Mm-hmm. It's great. I'm loving the witch thing that's going on right now. This is a perfect book for this time of year. It takes place right during the fall equinox, and we're like in that time. I'm in deep love with it. Black Magic, number one by Image Comics, written by Greg Rucka. It is a must read.
Yeah, the art is who? Nicholas Scott?
Yeah, Nicholas Scott, who I'm not very familiar with, but
super
kills
good.
It on this book.
Yeah, I'll back you up. That was a great comic.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Next comic. Let's do this. Next comic.
My pick of the week is Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, number one.
But Curtis, we just had an Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, number one, 8 months ago.
I know. This is all new, all different, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, number one. Only our second first issue so far this year, it says right on the cover.
That's helpful.
Here's the fun thing about this book. Even though it's all new, all different, it's the same creative team as the last book.
It's not that new.
And it
different.
Picks up right where the last one left off. So
there's nothing new.
It's all new and all different in the sense that it's a new issue of Squirrel Girl. But
it continues to be good.
It continues to be great. It's still Ryan North. It's still Erica Henderson on the art. It's a great comic. I talk about it all the time. It's a hard sell. That's why I like to keep bringing it up. People are skeptical when
why?
I say they're
why?
Like, hey, man, I should. You got any recommendations for me? I'm like, dude, what about USG? Have you checked her out?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, what? She has the powers of a squirrel. I'm totally uninterested in that comic book. But they should get interested in it because it's funny. It's smart. She uses her powers for goodness. She's a college student. She's got the best roommate in comics, Nancy Whitehead.
Maybe the best name in comics.
Nancy Whitehead.
Yeah.
Great
name. I feel like Nancy Whitehead's going to grow up to be the next Diane Reams. I'm totally okay with that.
I'm cool with that. I could see that. She's got maybe a future in radio. Yeah. She hangs out with her best friend, Tippy Toe.
Mm-hmm.
He's a squirrel.
Is it a he?
Might be a girl. It wears a bow. But, you know, I don't want to
Let's not put labels on it.
That's right.
Don't put your gender norms on that squirrel.
I'm not going to. Tippy Toe's cool as hell. Chipmunk Hunk is also up in this piece.
Chipmunk Hunk.
He's hunky. He gets down with...
Did he name himself Chipmunk Hunk?
He did.
Yeah. You know, you got to admire the confidence.
Yep, that's the right.
Thing. Yeah. He's a little bit of a dandy, and I'm okay with that. Also in this issue, Koi Boy. One of the others, I guess, on Team Squirrel Girl.
I missed that.
Yeah, Koi Boy. And they save people from burning buildings and do all kinds of cool stuff. They go to college. They're all computer science students. We get to meet Squirrel Girl's parents in this issue, y'all.
Squirrel Girl?
Yeah.
Squirrel Girl's mom is wearing a shirt in this comic.
Uh-huh.
What does it say? I'm squirreling away a place in my heart for Squirrel Girl.
Yes, that's exactly what
it says. Her mom is wearing. I love that on so many levels.
So her mom's name is Maureen Green.
Mm-hmm.
Squirrel Girl's name is Doreen Green. Squirrel Girl's dad, we learn, is named Dor. Dor Green, D-O-R Green.
And you smash them together.
And they smash them together. They couldn't think of a name. Like, she's born. They're like, what are we going to name our daughter?
Smash our names together quick.
That's super funny, y'all. If you like fun, if you like good times, if you like good art, if you like B-list villains, like in this issue we have Brain Drain.
If you like just pulling your head out of your ass and not taking everything so goddamn seriously.
That's right.
Just relax and read a comic and chuckle.
Have a good time.
And have a good time.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about this book is it's super funny the whole time. It's got a lot of heart, which mm-hmm. I like.
It's got a ton of heart.
It's got good characters, good characterization, good writing.
Absolutely. But it's also a good comic. It's not just funny.
Yeah.
There's a story in here.
It's got some depth.
Yeah, I really like it.
Can I say that this book, a few things make me nostalgic for my college years.
Go ahead.
But this book has all like the fun and exciting parts about going to college. She's been in college now for 2 years. But you're like meeting new people and trying to figure yourself out and figure them out and how it's all going to play together. And it's just like, it's all the fun stuff about college and she's experiencing it. And she's such an optimist about everything.
Yeah, she's not. So you say that she's discovering herself, but she's not like riddled by self-doubt.
No, not at
in
all.
Any way.
No, she like, knows exactly who she is.
USG knows she is the shit.
Yeah.
Her optimism knows no bounds. And it's infectious, y'all.
Yeah.
Like, I read this book and I'm like, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Stay upbeat.
Just stay upbeat.
You know what I mean? That's the thing.
Just shut up and stay upbeat.
You know?
Read Squirrel Girl.
She who seeks beauty will find it. And that's what I got. Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, number one.
Okay, Curtis.
All new, all different.
You said that in our first take of this podcast.
Where did you learn that?
Why are you saying that?
Well, because I watched a documentary on this photographer, and he's just a really cool dude, and he talks about, that's a famous quote from someone.
Oh, okay.
It's super interesting, because I think you credited that to yourself on our first take.
Well,
I
probably did, because, you know.
Do you want to attribute it to somebody? You want to make up who it's attributed to?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think Tommy Lee Jones said that.
I hope so. Two-Face?
In the movie Batman Forever.
Yeah. So that's my huge pick of the week. My huge pick.
Unbeatable Squirrel Girl.
Number one, do it. There's dollar issues. There's a trade. I know you're thinking to yourself, but I only like the Punisher. Like, Carnage is my favorite comic, and I don't care if it's been 20 years. I only love Carnage.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
It's like, jump out of the symbiote pool for just a hot minute
mm-hmm.
and check out some USG.
Because... I'm glad that we stumbled on USG, because I struggle saying Squirrel Girl sometimes.
It's a mouthful, y'all.
You put Unbeatable in front of it, and it's a trouble.
Unbeatable Squirrel Girl.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you got to pitch this book to people. The first thing you got to do is, like, tell them what book
they
should
read. Say it.
And if you trip over, if you know, right out of the gate.
Confidence down.
Exactly.
You can't even say the name of the book. I don't want it.
Yeah.
Why don't you show me a book you could say, what the customer then says to me.
I want her to team up with Kamala Khan so bad.
Has that happened yet?
I don't think it has.
I don't
think
so.
Her, Kamala Khan, and Miles Morales to all show up to the same event.
That's definitely
that would be like
happen.
A comic dream. Because
they're teens?
Because they're teens.
Oh, yeah. You would lose your head would explode.
I got goosebumps just talking about it.
I can see your goosebumps.
Yo, goofball. Nick, what do you got?
We're just ripping through these big picks, you
it's
guys.
It's like we've done it all before.
I love it. Art Ops. This is a Vertigo number one from Mike Allred. And even though I've said the name of the writer several times... I still can't remember.
Well, we know
his name.
It's colored by Laura Allred.
And it's written by Sean Simon.
Yeah.
The premise of Art Ops. Are you guys ready for this?
I think so. I hope so.
Yeah.
Art is real.
Say what?
Just bear with me.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
Art subjects are real.
Or at least they can be.
So the content of art... can be extracted from the art itself
mm-hmm.
and turned into a real thing in the world of Art Ops. So at the beginning of this book, it opens up, Mona Lisa is in danger in this agency whose name... Does anybody remember the name of this agency?
I think it's just Art Ops.
Is it just Art Ops?
I think so.
Might just be that.
I think it is.
They have to extract the Mona Lisa out of this painting. She turns into a real lady.
Yep.
And they have to put her in a sort of witness protection-ish program because she's in danger of some kind.
Yeah, and they put like a fake Mona Lisa back in the...
They put up a forgery.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the main thrust of the story. Mona Lisa is, you know, amongst us now in the world of the living under some sort of protection.
Working at a convenience store of all places.
Working at a convenience store.
Which I love.
Or was she just shopping at a convenience
store? No, she worked there. She was bagging, I think.
Oh, maybe you're right.
Yeah.
And the other side of the story is that the head of Art Ops, her son, who's kind of a piece of poop, he's not really, doesn't seem like that nice a guy.
Well, you know, he's got a lot of excuses, you know, broken home.
He thinks he comes from broken home. His mom is like out, unbeknownst to him, running Art Ops.
Yeah.
So he doesn't get to see her very much, and that's a bummer.
He has some resentments,
He's got some resentment.
Yeah.
And Mark, because you look like a light bulb just went off.
Yeah, because I figured out a plot twist they're going to go down on this, and I think it's super interesting.
Oh, interesting.
Because he doesn't know his dad.
Yeah.
He makes the statement that his dad's been gone.
Maybe he is Art.
Maybe his dad is from a famous painting.
What?
Maybe he's
Wouldn't
a famous
that be cool?
painting. At any rate, he is, you know, against his own will, he's getting pulled into the family business, and he really doesn't want to be because he's super mad at his mom because she wasn't around. She was running Art Ops, unbeknownst to him,
yeah.
Once again. So it was really, really interesting. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I love the goofball premise.
The premise is totally wacky. And they're playing it straight,
yep,
for the most part. But it's Mike Allred, so the whole thing seems kind of tongue-in-cheek just by virtue of the art, because the art's kind of silly and cartoony.
Nick, where else would I know this illustrator?
Mike Allred?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Ecstatics?
My favorite comic of all time, maybe.
Yeah. That really good Silver Surfer run.
Did a great Silver Surfer run.
Yeah.
iZombie, I think?
That's him.
Yep.
Yeah, amongst...
Madman is probably
Madman.
Did he do the 3D Madman issue?
He sure did.
God, that was a good book.
Remember that?
Yeah,
that was 3D comic ever.
Yeah, absolutely,
one of the first times we like really lost our shit on the podcast was talking about that 3D comic this dude did, yeah. Mike Allred.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
He has a really distinct style, and this is a perfect example of an artist, I think, pulling a book along. Like, the premise of this is really cool. I think it's like super wacky and kind of out there, and I like it. The writing is kind of this and that-ness to me. Like, the dialogue is okay. I don't... The kid, the focused teenager protagonist is, like, maybe a little too whiny by half.
Sure.
Perhaps. But I don't care. I'm totally all in because the art's so good.
Yeah. So when I first read this book, I was pretty on the fence about it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was pretty okay. But as my brain has explored the possibilities for this book... I'm pretty excited about it. I love the idea, and I want to know if it can go vice versa. So I love the idea that we can pull people out of paintings.
Can you
go into the art?
Yeah.
Well, we do establish that they put in a fake Mona.
Right, but did they just hang up a fake painting?
I think they just hang up a fake painting. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I find that whole concept to be super fascinating. And there's not a lot of books about art. There's not a lot of comic books, you know, as an art medium.
Yeah.
We don't really explore that. And we're starting to see that right now. There's some books coming out about the Louvre, and we're getting a lot of this little art moment in comic books, and I'm really excited for it.
There's a really neat moment in this book that I'm not going to spoil like I did the first time we did this podcast.
Okay.
Where the art world and the real world kind of like mesh together in a way that is so visually amazing, I thought.
Agreed.
It turned the book around. As soon as that happened, and as soon as we like visually had that touchstone for the rest of the book,
yeah,
I just was like, this is it. This is my pick.
Cool.
Love this book. So that's Art Ops from Vertigo. Sean Simon, Mike Allred. Vertigo on a tear.
Huge tear. Yeah. You, the first time we did this show, you both made a very interesting comment about the history of Vertigo and where it's led us. And I thought it was very profound as someone who wouldn't have made that assumption. Can you give it to me again?
Well, Vertigo's important to the medium.
Why?
Huge. Yeah.
So if right now we're going through a comic book renaissance, and I think that we are.
Agreed with that.
I think we owe a lot of that to more creator autonomy.
Sure.
And I think a big thrust in creative autonomy being like commercially viable and critically renowned was Vertigo.
Yeah.
And it's Sandman leading into Fables.
Transmetropolitan. Why the Last Man.
Yeah.
What else? There's a million.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So I think Vertigo doesn't... they have not been putting out a ton of stuff. You know, we usually, in the conversation of like big creator-owned books, it usually revolves back to Image.
Yeah.
But Vertigo is, that's, those dudes deserve a lot of credit for where we are right now.
Well, yeah.
As a newish comic reader, I would have never known that.
Yeah, so, you know, people talk, and we mentioned this before, but the, you know, two of the biggest beats in comics, in modern comics, are The Watchmen
mm-hmm.
and Dark Knight Returns. And we think that Vertigo is on that same list.
Absolutely.
You know, you had DC, a big publisher, putting a lot of weight behind new genres.
Absolutely.
You know, just new styles. And like you say, creator autonomy, you know, creators being able to flex their muscles.
Cool.
And, man, Preacher changed my game. Transmetropolitan just shook me up.
Yeah, there was nothing like it.
Yep.
So 1993, Vertigo stepped on the scene, which is like at or exactly around the formation of Image. And they were making
yep.
very different books at the time.
And
they were not making the same types of books.
For sure. And Karen Berger, mm-hmm. we should mention. So that was kind of the shakeup with Vertigo. She ran it for, you know, 20 years.
Yes.
And then when she stepped out, you know, that's that moment where Vertigo kind of disappeared a little bit.
Yeah, that was in 2012.
And now we've got 12 new series from Vertigo over the next 12 weeks.
We've already
got 4 out so far.
Yes.
And last week's Twilight Children was phenomenal.
Oh, it was
very good.
I've been thinking about that book nonstop.
Yep.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
And this book now is me. The more I dive into this book, the more my brain's loving it.
Oh, you turned around on Art Ops a little
well,
bit.
Well, yeah, because now I'm wondering, like, well, if I could be put into an artist painting, which artist would I choose? That's a super
there
cool question to ask.
Yeah.
I would have never thought about that. It'd be Monet. But
I knew you had an answer to that question.
And if it's been happening, like, you know, throughout history.
Right.
Right? How long has the Art Ops been around?
I've traveled.
So there you go.
To see some paintings in my life.
You want to swim in them.
Well, I want to swim in them, and what if they're forgeries? What if Art Ops has swapped them out, and I've been fooled?
Oh, they're all forgeries, baby.
Yeah.
You've never seen any real art.
Oh, God, that's super depressing.
Yeah, I don't know how to tell you this.
Spent a lot of money to try to go see some art in my life.
You threw away a lot of money in the garbage.
Oh, sadness.
So my pick was Art Ops. Vertigo, number one. Marcus's pick was Black Magic, spelled all stupid.
It is stupid how they spell magic.
From Image. And Curtis's pick was USG.
Number one.
Or Unbeatable Squirrel Girl.
Well said.
Thank you.
You did a good job.
Number one, all new, all different.
But listeners, so many more comics came out this week.
That's true.
And we are going to dive right into our pull box. We have done this before, so we are ready. We are ready to give you all the info. I am going to kick it off with Batgirl number 45. Hey, listeners, don't know if you know this. I love Dick Grayson. He's my favorite.
We know.
He's my favorite DC character.
Favorite DC character, period.
Oh, I mean, I grew up at just the right time for Dick Grayson to be the coolest dude on the face of the earth.
I love me some Nightwing. I love me some Dick Grayson.
Yeah, he was like Robin when I was young, and then he became Nightwing when I was an angsty teenager. That's when I got introduced to him and he lost the disco suit. But either way, Batgirl, Babs Tarr has been killing it on it. The whole creative team has been killing it. Finally, Barbara Gordon meets up with Dick Grayson now that he's back in Gotham. And it's awesome. Also, this whole book takes place at a wedding. And I'm at a point in my life where I go to a lot of weddings. So it's very cool to see how a superhero might act in a situation where I am there all the time.
I have a soft spot for weddings and superhero comics.
Really?
Yep. It happens every now and then, and usually it's, you know, there's a big wedding and all the superheroes are there, and then like a villain attacks the wedding.
Typically.
You know? But and yes, it's cheesy. It's been done. Some say might say trite.
You don't care.
I don't care. I love it.
Yep. All right.
Batgirl number 45, please read this series.
All right. My first comic of the pull box is Titan number 2, and this is from a small company called Study Group Comics. We've talked about them a few times in the podcast. They do a book called It Will All Hurt from Furl Dalrymple that we like a whole lot.
Yes, we do.
This is a great little publisher. This book, Titan, is about a mining colony in deep space, and there's these genetically engineered Titans, which are essentially giant human beings, and they can only function on the gravity of this particular planet. And this is about a manager sort of a dude who goes there. Nick, it's about sort of like management, I guess.
Why do you say that to me? Like I would really like that?
Yeah, you love like administrative type.
Because I love administration
stuff.
And management theory?
Yeah.
You're right, I do!
So
this sounds like a great comic.
It's super good, and it's basically about this manager guy trying to not close this colony, but it's underperforming. Mm-hmm. And where are the Titans going to go?
I know how that goes.
You know?
About underperformance.
I'm going to have to shut it down.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you know about underperformance, Nick?
What else do you think about this comic Titan, Curtis?
I just think the art's really nice, and I love the talking. There's a lot of talking in this book, mm-hmm. a lot of dialogue. It's really nice.
Working for you.
It's really cementing all these characters in my mind through like actual personality. Each character is a character.
Excellent.
I really dug it.
Titan number two.
Yeah, number one still around.
Study Group Comics.
Yeah.
Tell your comic shop to get Titan number one. Go into your comic shop, wherever it is,
mm-hmm.
and say, hey, Titan number one. Get it, Brown Eye.
Yeah.
Say it just like that. Because that's the only way we're all going to survive.
That's right.
More on that later. My pick, this isn't my pick, but also in the poll box this yeah. week is The Spire.
Oh, yeah.
I've said this before. I said it before earlier today. I'll say it again. This is the best book you're not reading.
Agreed.
You love this comic, Nick.
I love it so much. Depth of characters, depth of world building. The art's really good. The dialogue is super snappy. It's just so rich and good, and you're not reading it, and I wish you would.
Yeah, what is it? Science fiction, fantasy
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
Murder mystery.
It's about a cop, ostensibly.
Politics.
In the seat of an empire that is possibly in decay and is possibly dying. It's one of my favorite goddamn comics that I'm reading, and I know you guys are reading it, but
I'm loving it also.
The listeners should read it as well.
Yes.
One of my favorite goddamn comics is Sam Wilson, Captain America.
Yeah, it is.
This is a great book, and what I love about this issue in particular, it's diving into the political world even more. All about leakers, information leakers, mm-hmm. which is very topical right now. But what makes this comic have a heartbeat is at the center of all that is a conflict between Steve Rogers and Sam Wilson. And it's so, so good. This book is firing on all cylinders for me. It's pretty wordy, but I'm loving what's going on in the dialogue between these two dudes and their different ideologies is so perfect for this moment in our political history. What? What?
Nothing. I just love that you say things like this moment in our political history. That's just my man.
It's pretty
Marcus
good.
All over.
Why can't I say that?
You can say it. You have to say it.
What? What? I don't understand the chuckle.
It's just so classically you, and I love it.
All right. Well, I'm gonna roll with it.
I love. Know what? This book I was lukewarm on.
Yeah.
I thought I had some inflamed feelings for it after we listened to our Fox and Friends.
I remember that.
Talk about it.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go to bat for Captain America, but. Yeah. I just am having a hard time caring about Sam Wilson as a dude.
Really?
Yeah.
I think he's a super interesting character.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all about him right now.
Yeah, I'm not getting it.
And also, I'm all about his sidekick, Red Wing, who I'm going to say sidekick of the year. Super cool. Super cool. I'm in love with this book. I don't know what's not working for you, but old man Steve Rogers is best Steve Rogers. I've said that before.
Yeah.
And watching him and Sam have the dialogue that they are is great, but it's still also like very comic booky. Like at one point they're having this conversation. Sam's kind of done with it, but you can't just walk away from Steve Rogers. The man's a legend. So what's he do? He uses his superpower to call upon all the birds in the land to come poop on Steve and all of his SHIELD agents. And it's funny. It's like it's
arguably more disrespectful.
Probably. But the book, I just find the book to have a lot of heart, and I love what they're doing. This idea of a Captain America who's not afraid to share his political views.
Do you think they're going to introduce a new topical contemporary issue with in every issue?
Oh, I hope not.
I hope not too.
Well, you know, I disagree. I hope they do. I like that it's stirred up the shitstorm. So I guess I'm a liberal or a progressive or whatever you want to say.
Socialist is the word.
Socialist,
for.
Yeah, communist, whatever.
Right.
You know, I want people to make enough money to live and stuff like this and healthcare and
yeah,
yada yada yada.
Sick.
I know. So remember we talked a little bit of that first issue where we were you wanted it to go farther, right? And you know, I think we made the other point was like, oh, yeah, well, I think as far as this goes, this is going to ruffle some feathers.
Mm-hmm.
And it totally did.
It completely did.
And this is where we're at in the world such as it is today that, you know, it's real easy to ruffle feathers.
Yeah.
If we cured cancer, if there was an article on the interwebs tomorrow about cancer cured,
yeah,
the first post would be like, there's too many people in the world. More people need to die. What idiot cured cancer? You know, there would be some vitriol mm-hmm. somehow. You can't say anything, can't do anything somehow. Like, I love pizza. pizza has been running free and unchecked for years, and I'm sick of it. You know, there has to be a counter to reason.
Yeah. He is diving headfirst into some things that people do actually disagree about.
Totally.
Yes, agreed. But for me, I think, you know, and I think you mentioned it, like, he could have taken it even farther.
Yeah, I just wanted to see Sam Wilson's take on it and not Sam Wilson's remembrance of the reaction.
But we're getting that in this issue. We're getting that. He breaks down his argument for wiretapping.
Yeah.
Or not, but for leaking information pretty well.
Yep.
He lays it out. Also, Nick Spencer's writing this book, and I trust that dude.
He's good.
He's a good writer.
The art is really great, too.
It's just a... I find it to be a very enjoyable book in the political climate we're in today.
Ow! Bang, and I'm going to take it away with Robin, Son of Batman, number 5.
Mm-hmm.
So my favorite Robin is Damian Wayne.
Okay.
And he has the DNA of the Bat, and he will inherit the Bat Cave. I've said it before, like 45 minutes ago. And I'll say it again.
He's probably in the will.
He's definitely in the will. Love me some Dick Grayson. I love the disco blue Nightwing outfit.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up on that. I love it. So
but
I
Damian
feel
Wayne
you.
Damian Wayne is he's the in best. Your heart.
He's my number one Robin. And the character has changed a lot since he was introduced in a great way. I think he's really progressed as an interesting character. One of my favorite DC characters, period. I love this book. Robin, Son of Batman, number 5. He's trying to live up to his dad, and I think it's really cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Over the Garden Wall, number 3, came out this week. Number 3 of 4. Marcus, did you finally watch this cartoon?
I did.
Did you love it?
Much to my surprise, I deeply loved it.
Did you cry?
I didn't cry.
Okay.
I did that earlier today once.
Why? And why was it much to your surprise?
I clumped it in the category of two TV shows that I do not enjoy very much, Rick and Morty and Adventure Time.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a very different show, and it roots itself in classic fairy tale literature, and yet it doesn't take itself seriously at all. But the way that it does it, like, the humor is just smart and fun and lighthearted, and I just, like, watching this movie in fall, wrapped in a blanket, just kind of relaxing and enjoying it. It's just a really magical viewing experience.
It'll make your whole day.
It really will. And I'm glad you made me watch it. And I say to those people out there who maybe have similar tastes to me.
Yep, there's not many of them, but if they're listening.
Fair enough.
There's at least a dozen of them.
I think Over the Garden Wall is a very, very wonderful thing to watch.
The cast, whimsy.
The cast of Prairie Home Companion, if you're listening right now. Give Over the Garden Wall a chance.
Garrison Keillor would love the shit out of Over the Garden Wall.
Yeah.
For sure. I can tell already.
It's not light. You know, you say that it's the humor is light, but the subject matter is pretty dark.
I agree.
Actually.
Yeah.
It's got some pretty profound shit going on.
Oh, it's smart. And I implore you to rewatch Adventure Time and Rick and Morty. Don't cheat yourself,
but do
Marcus.
It this time. But when you watch it this time, just try this. Pull your head out of your ass. While you're watching it, you'll be able to hear better. You'll be able to see your TV more clearly.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that you watched it and enjoyed it.
Thank you.
And the comic's really, really good if you're not reading it.
It's excellent.
Issue 3 of 4 out today.
Nice.
Did you read Angela? What'd you think of it?
Angela.
Yeah.
Angela. However you choose to say it. In Hell, number 1, is out this week. I have been really enjoying the ride that Marvel has been taking us with the Angela series.
That sounded very rehearsed.
My name is Marcus. I really liked Angela.
You can choose to say words however you want. Like, if you wanted to say Angelia.
This is America. I can say words how I choose to say them.
Also this week, Angela number 1 came out from my fucking shit. God damn it.
What do you got, Curtis?
So Secret Wars, the official guide to the Marvel Multiverse, came out, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a Marvel Encyclopedia issue. It's like 80 pages. It's all about Secret Wars.
It's like a lot of just words in
just,
there.
Just like readers are probably familiar with Wikipedia. This is like Wikipedia, like but printed.
Oh.
For all of Secret Wars.
Oh.
So it's just page after page of reading with some light spot illustrations.
So it's like if Wikipedia was a book.
Yeah.
If the online encyclopedia Wikipedia,
uh-huh.
If they turn it into a book.
About Secret Wars.
Cool.
That is this comic.
I like this book because it gives little statistic bars for all the superheroes, like on the back of a toy.
Yeah.
Like, this person has 3 bars of strength and 4 bars of cunning.
I don't like that because that is our job, is to tell you who is sweeter than who is somebody else, like, who's going to win in a fight and shit. Like,
yeah.
That is not... I don't want a book to tell you that.
It's super cool.
Ask your comic shop guy.
I like attributes, though, where it's just like, this character's mind is 4. You know what I mean? Power.
Yeah.
3.
Do you think Victor Von Doom has ever been as dope as he is in the Secret Wars run?
No. I mean...
This might be the pinnacle
Doom
of Victor Von Doom.
He's so doomy.
Doom is the shit.
Yeah.
He is an exceptionally great character and villain in general. And I think this is just a perfect, like, it's just very doomish.
He shares your love of management.
You know he does. Yeah, he's just trying to run a tight ship.
That's right. You know, here's the thing.
That's all he's trying to do.
Trains and stuff.
I'm glad you said
and everybody gets up his ass about it.
You know? But who put this thing together? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Doom.
That's who. So this talks about my favorite part of this has got all kinds of good stuff, but it'll tell you about the incursions, the big event that leads to Secret Wars.
Which is a little fuzzy.
It's a lot of stuff.
Secret Wars.
If you weren't reading like John Hickman's Avengers for like 4 years, you know, you probably missed it.
That's right.
But it's pretty dang cool.
Cool.
Also, this week, Angela, number one, comes out. I have been really enjoying the journey of Angela under the guiding hand of Marvel Comics. I think she's a really cool character. This book continues that story in a really interesting and fun way. Angela's going all over the place.
Yeah. I am all about Angela.
She's in all the realms, doing all the things. But behind it is a really cool character. And her plot development has been fascinating. I love watching Angela fight things more than just about any superhero.
Because of the ribbons? Because of all of her ribbons?
She's got like the ribbon whips, but she's at the same, she's just like a really good slayer.
She's like a berserker.
Yeah.
She just rips stuff up.
She's awesome. She's like what I wish the Red Sonja comics were.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is, so Angela's been on this pretty big journey. The last year with Marvel, and now she's in Hell, H-E-L, which is another realm, much like the one that she came from, Heaven. Read this book. Angela's awesome. She's one of my favorite superheroes right now.
How do you pronounce Hell differently from Hell?
Hell.
I don't know.
Is that how you just got to put a little husk on it?
I think you got to put a little husk on it.
You know, like, normal Hell is just like Hell.
Yeah.
Hell.
This is Hell.
Yeah. I think people, I know that people are hesitant to pick up the Angela series. Comes from Spawn.
Hey, watch it.
It comes from Spawn. And it's been in kind of litigation for a while. She's a character that's a little different than your normal superhero lineup. But every single Angela book I've enjoyed
it's super,
so far.
It's so weird that it's so good.
Yeah, and you know, when they announced it, I literally fell asleep halfway through the announcement.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, Angela's coming.
Gives a shit.
And then, turns out,
it's really good.
Totally awesome.
What I like about this book is it how it highlights how weird Marvel is in general. So you've got your cityscape Marvel,
your Manhattan, your superhero stuff.
Hawkeye just like in a tenement building in New York. Got a few books like that.
Pizza, tracksuits.
Yeah, Doreen Gray is just like Doreen Green. Excuse me,
Doreen Green.
She's just on a college campus. You got your real world stuff. You got your cosmic stuff.
Crazy cosmic.
You got your weird Doctor Strange other dimensional stuff. You got your Thor Asgardian stuff. And all of it works together, and it all kind of... Angela is hopping between a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, she's...
A lot,
she's,
mostly on the cosmic and, you know, otherworldly kind of side of it. But it's so cool to put into relief how weird and big Marvel is and how it all works.
Yeah, she may be better than most superheroes hops around. She was with the Guardians for a while in space.
Oh, yeah.
She's been doing the Thor stuff for a long time. But also, like, Homegirl be stopping muggers in New York City all day if she could. She's all over the place, and it works really, really well.
And what's her thing? Her thing is that, like, nothing without its cost.
Right.
That's right.
I'm not doing shit without... Where's my money?
Yeah.
Or its equivalent.
Right.
F you, pay me.
Yeah.
But now she's the queen of hell, and that's awesome. It's a really great book. Check it out.
Cool. Bunch of other stuff this week. New Rick and Morty, new Avengers number 2.
Yeah.
Skylanders, Superchargers.
Oh, nice. So the new Skylanders game you guys just came out, you know, like last month.
Uh-huh.
And the twist this time is there's vehicles.
Spyro flies. He's the main character of Spyro Flies. He doesn't need a vehicle. He's got wings, dog.
Aren't they all vehicles, essentially?
Well, essentially. But, you know, you need to sell more toys. So here's the thing. You get a Skylander dude, and you get his matching vehicle. You put them together at the same time. They become supercharged.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And so they added, like, racing levels and, like, underwater submarine levels and flying levels.
Yeah, is it sweet? Is it fun?
It's pretty damn sweet, y'all.
Do you own all of them?
Of course. Well, all the ones that are out. There's not that many out. It's brand new. So they do little waves of them. But here's the thing, right? They finally added co-op multiplayer online. It's like a Diablo-style game, right? Essentially, at its heart, it's Diablo and Pokemon.
Pokemans
smashed together, right? And that was like the thing. Like, you can't play with a buddy unless you're together. You can still play together
split
with your
screen,
pal.
Shared screen. But now it's
Diablo
online.
Style. But now you can do it online.
Diablo style.
So, anywhoozy.
Can I ask you a question, Mr. Sullivan?
Yeah, do it.
Do you think you have the most extensive Skylanders collection in the state of Michigan?
I like to think so.
Will you take a picture of it for our listeners?
I will.
And so we can put it on our social media.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Like, the year that it came out, right, this is like four years ago, I think, we're at here. I got it. My kids still lived at home. And I deluded myself into thinking, like, oh, I'll get this and we'll all play together, right? And my kids are like, at this point, my son's like 18. You know, my daughter's like,
oh, my kids are gonna
16.
Love it.
The kids, the little kitties, will love this little toy video game.
All the while.
So I got a bunch of them for Christmas. I bought them all for me, but then I wrapped them all up and put them under the tree and put everybody else's name on it.
Yeah.
So that was fun. And when they opened them, I was like, hey, I got you a present, but you can't take it anywhere, and it's really mine. And then play this video game with me. And they played for like Christmas morning, and then
moved on with their lives.
But now I'm totally obsessed, and I have all of them, and I'm just totally into it, and it's my secret. Not a secret.
You might have all of them.
I have all the ones that have been released.
That's nuts.
That's insane.
So, they've released so many.
So over 4 years, this is the fifth video game in the series. It's about 200 toys.
Fuck.
Yeah. But I'm happy to say I buy a lot of them on deals, and I've never paid over retail price. Which is nice because some of them get very collectible.
Does that help?
Yep. I have some toys that are worth like $150 for one little $8 dude.
For a little toy.
Yeah.
So, Curtis, here's the thing you may not know. When you buy Skylanders at Toys R Us,
yes.
It sends an email to the shop.
Oh, I know that.
Okay, so we get to track a little bit of your Skylander habit as employees of yours.
Yeah.
And I love your enthusiasm.
Can I say I actively check my phone for the next 10 minutes so I can delete that email before you guys see them?
You know, you can just change your fucking email.
Yeah, but
buddy.
I mean, no, I'm not going to do that.
So you just must be over the moon for a new Skylanders comic. Are you super stoked?
You know, I read it.
Did you love it?
It's very benign, you know what I mean?
Really?
It's definitely made for someone much younger than me.
Yeah.
But if I was 10 years old and I read this comic, it'd be my jam.
You'd lose it.
But I love the connection that it gives me with a lot of little kids that come in the store.
No, that's true, and I've seen that. Kids come in looking for Skylanders stuff, and Curtis
just like,
is just
let's
like
go.
Right on
let's
it.
Get on it.
I will talk to you in depth about Skylanders.
Yeah. So
that is pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm all about it. And, you know, that's the thing. You know, I'm a giant baby. That's why I work at a comic store.
Yeah.
You know,
trying to maintain that little kid.
They have a Marvel equivalent.
They do.
They have a bunch of weird, like, the Disney Infinity thing looks kind of neat.
Yeah, but and that's part of the Marvel. You can buy the Marvel superheroes.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I want it so bad.
I would love to play that with you if you were to buy all those Marvel superheroes.
I can't do it because if I get one, then I'm effed in the B and I got to get them all.
Yeah, you can't have all.
No.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, they just did Lego Star Wars, the video game.
Yeah.
So you buy, like, Legos that are Star Wars. So already you put Star Wars and Legos together. That's trouble. I love that. But then you put it together and then you put it into your video game.
You build it, and then it's a physical thing, and then you can pop it into your video game.
Yeah, that's a nightmare scenario for me. I can't even look at it.
Yeah, you gotta steer clear.
That's thousands of dollars.
Curtis gets the sweats when he's at Toys R Us.
I'm
like,
saying.
He just knows that they're nearby.
I don't even go to the Marvel toy video game section.
Oh, boy.
Well, anyways.
So, Nick, there's one more comic I want to talk about. The first time we did this, we talked about Wild's End.
Yeah.
No,
you gonna cry again?
No. Okay. Issue number two came out of the second series of Wild's End. I had this whole thing where I talked about how great Wild's End is, and I got pretty emotional because I think it's the best series.
I don't mean
out
to give
right
you
now.
Shit. It was really touching, and you made some really good points.
Thanks.
It's a really good book.
It is a really good book, and I just want to say I talk about Wild's End a lot, and I don't want it to be like I'm beating a dead horse here, but I have such a hard time selling this book to people, and so few people are picking it up. It's going to be our book of the month next month, volume one, mm-hmm. at both Vault of Midnight locations. Please, if you haven't read Wild's End, pick it up. It's in my opinion, the best book coming out right now. Volume 2 is just as good as Volume 1. And you are doing yourself a discredit by not reading it. And I think most of the staff at our shops would agree.
It's spectacular. Just because it's talking animals, don't let that turn you off.
Yeah.
And I know that's tough. Because that's historically not an awesome genre of comic books.
No, I'll agree with you there, Marcus. It is a tougher sell because it's a little outside the window. But that is a darn fine comic book. Yeah. One of my favorite books of the last couple of years. And good for anyone. I guess it's a slightly mature.
Yeah.
But
Dan Abnett and Ian J. Colbert are doing something really magical with that book.
Killing it.
And I just want everyone to know about it.
Excellent. Awesome. So a whole bunch of fat comics came out this week.
What's a fat comic?
It's like a graphic novel.
It's like a thick-ass comic.
Or like a trade paperback. I don't want to call it anything else.
Just fat comic.
When next time somebody comes in, like, oh, I only read graphic novels. You'd be like, oh, you mean a fat-ass comic?
Oh, like a big old thick-ass comic
book. Yeah, I'll show you where they are. They're all around you. Look around you. That was a good call, Curtis, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
So this week we saw Avengers. Volume 2, which is Jonathan Hickman's lead-in to Secret Wars.
Yeah, so this is Time Runs Out Volume 2. So they did a hardcover of this, and then they did that silly thing where they waited 6 months for the softcover.
Yeah.
And so there was no Volume 2 of any kind for 6 months.
Yeah.
And this is the lead-in to Secret Wars. John Hickman's run on Avengers was great. It was cosmic as hell, super big. This starts the whole incursion of the worlds thing. So
Excellent. If
you're like, where do I start on Secret Wars? Here it is, Avengers, Time Runs Out.
Fantastic. We also saw Casanova Asedia come out. Deathstroke Volume 1 came with a mask.
It comes with Deathstroke's mask, dude.
Yeah.
It's pretty sweet. It's
pretty Deathstroke-y. Love Volume 2, The Fox, the sequel to Love the Tiger.
Great book. Beautiful book.
Beautiful. Really cool book.
Yeah, Love Magnetic book. Press.
One
Love
Punch
those guys.
Man. Excuse me, One Punch Man Volume 3 came out this week. I'm excited about this. I read Kill la Kill last week. Volume 1.
Yeah.
It was a ton of fun. It was really, really good.
That's one of those ones that gets it, Kill la Kill. It's like in your face. The costumes are insane.
Madcap.
It's so nuts.
Silk, Volume 00, for some reason. The Life and Times of Cindy Moon, also released this week.
Silk is my favorite Spider book. I love it. Cindy Moon is like one of the best additions to the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
And she's just great. I love that book. I wish more people would read it.
Bitten by the same radioactive spider as Spider-Man, Peter Parker.
So they're cousins. They're spider cousins.
Yeah.
Well, I hope not, because their relationship gets pretty romantic.
That's true.
Oh, well, okay. Well, I hope they figure it all out. It sounds complicated.
It's great. She is an interesting superhero because her ideas about morality, what makes a good superhero, what makes a villain, I think is more realistic to what an actual person would have to deal with. They do a really good job tackling that in Silk.
Excellent. Oh, I didn't know that aspect of Silk.
Oh, yeah.
I'm behind on Silk. I was really liking that book, though.
Yeah, she grows up in a bunker, so she has like very little interaction with people. So when she gets
she's coming
out,
at it fresh.
She's coming at it fresh, yeah. But as an adult, it's super interesting.
I also saw that Guy Delisle's Guide to Neglectful Parenting was in the shipment this week. But
yeah.
I don't know. Was that new this week?
I don't know. There's a couple volumes of it, so I'm not sure.
I started peeking through that one. That's hilarious.
That guy's good at his job of making comic books.
Guide to Neglectful Parenting by Guy Delisle.
It's like if you need more, you know, guides to being...
Yeah, exactly.
A shitty parent. I certainly don't.
Isn't like every book basically that?
Yeah.
That was the poll box. Let's do the numbers.
Noise.
The comic book industry saw a rough third quarter, ICV2 reports, with single issue sales dropping 8.8% versus the same period in 2014. September sales overall were down nearly 20% for the month. Good news for graphic novels, however, is the third quarter of 2015 saw an annual increase of 12.5%, probably due in large part to the release of Saga Volume 5. Marvel claimed 60% of the top 10 single-issue slots in September, half of those belonging to Star Wars titles, with Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens number 1, landing on top of the heap. Overall, Marvel commanded 32.67% of the comic store market share in September, down from the nearly 40% that the company had been enjoying for much of the year, with DC Comics growing by 1% to land at just over a quarter of the market share, and Image Comics gaining 2 points for 11.81%. IDW gained nearly a point to hold at 5.72. To what can we attribute the overall drop? Gentlemen, ICV2 speculates that a large part of the drop is because of Secret Wars titles
Sure, that's
missing,
part of it.
Missing or delayed through most of the third quarter.
Yeah.
And I think probably it was because there wasn't enough liberal pandering in the comics this year. And if they had just played up too much, because liberals and their money.
That's right.
If they had just played up to liberals a little bit more and maybe bashed conservatives a little bit more,
right,
they actually could have made some money this year.
If only we had the Fox and Friends comic book expert to advise us right now.
Clayton?
Is that guy? Clayton.
Is that his name?
He knew his stuff.
He was
good. You know, he's just on point.
I've reached out to him. So. I offered him your spot, Marcus, on the podcast.
Really?
Yeah.
That's where we're going to go with
I
this.
I mean, I didn't want to tell you this way, but...
I hope he accepts.
So let me say this, 11.81% for Image Comics. Bang.
That's cool.
It's very cool.
That is a considerable gain for those guys over the last couple of years. Yep. They are killing it.
So, Nicholas, I have a theory.
Hit me. Theory craft. At me.
I'm starting to wonder if crossovers, exclusive crossovers, may be a bad idea for business.
Could be.
So we had Convergence, in which DC stopped all of their titles except for their Convergence titles. Mm-hmm. We now have Secret Wars, where Marvel has stopped essentially all of their titles except for their Secret Wars titles. And it makes it really hard to get new readership into comics when what they have available to them weekly is these giant, epic, big crossovers. Now, Marvel's done a really great job with Secret Wars, and it's turned out to be a really amazing crossover. But with things like Convergence that fell pretty flat, it makes it hard for those people to get into the industry.
I think we should fold this into the citizen question that's coming up
in
a minute.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. And I think when a lot of new business and a lot of growth in the industry is driven by new readers who don't normally read comics, I think putting all your eggs in the crossover basket, and for comic shop owners to put all their eggs in the big two, DC and Marvel basket, I think that spells disaster.
I think you're right.
Those are the numbers. Let's sidle into the board game corner.
Are there beanbag chairs in the board game corner?
What did we do last time for this bit? There's a beanbag chair.
Yep.
There's a lava lamp.
Yep.
There's a scented candle.
Well, last time you said the lava lamp needed an hour to warm up.
Oh, yeah. You can't just plug the lamp. We don't have time to wait for the lava lamp.
Well, we do now, and it's going strong. So let's sit down.
So much funnier the first time we did it.
It was really funny.
In the board game corner, you want to talk about a board game we just played recently?
I do. I want to talk about a board game called Time Stories.
Oh, you mean Tachyon Insertion in Major Events Stories?
Yes, absolutely. That's the one. And I'm going to start off by saying, I played this game with you, Nicholas.
Yep.
Our producer, Rachel Polk.
Yes.
And longtime friend of the show, Christian Silberice.
Yeah.
We made up a
also
time...
Also our buddies.
And our
all
friends.
These
yeah, all of our friends.
Yeah.
But we made up a time squad.
Yeah.
And in Time Stories, the idea is that you take your time squad, and you're in the future, and you go back to different moments in history where the timeline is being disrupted by some form of event.
Yeah, there's going to be a temporal fault.
And you have to figure out what's going on and fix it.
Yep. You have to solve the little mystery.
That's right.
And solve the puzzles.
This board game is unlike any other board game I've ever played before.
Yeah.
It is more attuned to a point-and-click adventure.
Yeah, so think Myst. Think Grim Fandango.
I love that game.
Think, yeah, Day of the Tentacle. Your classic walk around and look at things.
Click on stuff, discover.
Adventure game. But now make that a board game and make it cooperative.
Yeah.
Everybody's working together. Everybody's got control of the mouse. And you're just looking at stuff. You're inspecting rooms. You're solving puzzles.
But there's a time limit.
Everything you do in the game costs time.
And if you don't figure it out, if you don't complete the task, you get sucked out back to your time station.
Yep.
And you have to go and you lose a lot of your cards and stuff that you've accumulated.
Yep.
So you got to remember it all. And then you get shot back in. And
try to do it again.
Try to do it again. It is an amazing gameplay experience, unlike anything I've ever encountered before in board gaming.
I've never played anything like it. I can't stop thinking about it. I can't stop talking about it. Rich Polk, hey, buddy, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing really great. What did you think of Time Stories?
I have not been able to stop thinking about this game for the past 2 weeks. Like, it is always in my mind, and everything that I'm running into is reminding me of this game.
I love that.
We don't want to overhype it. Sorry, Curtis.
How many games have you guys played? How many sessions?
We've only played the one scenario
across
two sessions. We played the whole scenario. We played it through, like, three times.
Cool.
And two of those were failures, and then the third time we finally nailed it.
So this game isn't going to be for everyone.
Right. So because it's scenario driven, because you're dropping in. So in the first game, when you buy the box of the game, you get a ton of components and a giant board, and you use a fraction of it. Because it's built for more scenarios. In the first one, you are dropped into an insane asylum in 1921.
Ooh.
And you have to solve the mystery there. You're talking to patients. You're talking to the staff. You're inspecting stuff and solving puzzles. It's really, really neat. And then you either solve it or you don't. But in next month, actually, what's already released is the new scenario is set in the 90s. And it's in a totally different time with totally different characters and a new mystery.
Yeah.
So this game turns a lot of people off because it seems like the replayability is low.
It's almost like buying a show and
yes.
watching it. I mean, you're playing it, but you're learning the secrets of it as you go.
Absolutely. But for the money that you spend on it, the four of us had, 7 or 8 hours of a really kick-ass, pretty special board game experience, I'd say.
Yeah, the camaraderie you get when you leave that game with the group of people you've played it with is intense and wonderful. And I really attribute it a lot to playing a pen and paper role-playing game.
Yeah.
Is because you're going through the scenario as a team, you're using teamwork, you're getting everyone's opinion. And at the end, when you figure it out, there's a real sense of accomplishment as a group. Like, I don't really have the urge to play this game with people other than our time squad.
So that's really mostly because if I played the first scenario with somebody who hasn't played before, I would have to be either totally silent and like effectively do nothing in the game.
Right.
Or I would ruin it for everybody else.
Right.
Because it's so story driven. Like I've seen the beats of what happens in that scenario. And I want to play it again with you guys again, with the same group again, because I want to try and like do it better. I would play that same scenario again to like make it more efficient, like try to get a better score or whatever. But mostly like that, if there's a flaw in the game, it's that you can't think of it like a board game that you buy, put on your shelf and play with whoever comes over.
Yeah.
Because you are not going to be able to experience it the same way multiple times.
Can I say that one of my favorite bits that we had didn't even involve like the board? Like it was something that didn't even happen in the game. It was just like after the game was done.
Oh yeah.
The instructions told you to do something and I'm not going to say what it was. But it didn't involve the game at all. It didn't involve the board. It didn't involve anything like that. But it was like one of the best feelings of accomplishment.
It was this weird meta experience that involved like the materials of the game and doing something that you didn't think you were supposed to do. And our tiny minds just popped when that happened.
We lost our shit.
Yeah.
Everyone was so excited. There was like high fives.
And it's not in the instruction booklet. It's like it happens as a consequence of playing the game. The game tells you to do this thing in the real world. Yeah. It's very, very cool. So I submit to you, listener, if you're thinking about this game, buy it with three other friends. Everybody throws on it. It's a $60 game. Everybody buys it together.
Yeah.
If you dig it, and we think that you'll dig it, then buy the scenarios as a group as they come out, everybody collectively getting them together, and go through this experience with the same group, if at all possible.
The same time squad.
With the same, build a time squad. And go through it. It's very, very cool.
Rachel Polk, how's our Time Squad patch coming?
Oh man, it's in the works. I have to go over some shapes with you guys though.
Shit, I can't believe we're actually getting Time Squad patches.
Oh man,
that's awesome.
Yeah, we're totally getting Time Squad patches.
I think you should.
But I want Curtis. I want you to play this game as soon as you can because I want to talk to you about it.
I want to. Any game that's making you guys want to make a patch for it?
Yeah.
That's the review right there. That's the score.
And I have to say, Curtis, I'm getting a lot of my inspiration for this design from the design of the patches in Space Riders.
Oh, good call.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah,
that's a good idea.
And actually, so one of my other favorite moments in that game was it had to do with a crazy person and a plunger.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Can we, like, say that whole
thing? No. No, you can't. Okay. We can't spoil anything about that game for anyone.
Just had to do with a crazy person and a plunger.
There we go. Awesome. That's all I need to know. Sounds great.
Playtime Stories.
Playtime Stories.
It's out now. Space Cowboys is the publisher.
Just set aside, like, an entire evening to play it.
And just crush it.
It takes a long time.
And expect something different. Don't be mad at it. Just go with it.
Awesome.
That's what we got. You're an asshole.
No, you're an asshole.
Hey, Marcus.
Yes.
There's a segment we do sometimes called You're an Asshole.
We've done it before. You're absolutely correct.
And this week, we have one.
Do we?
Curtis?
Who is it?
It's Marcus.
Marcus Schwimmer is an asshole?
Yeah. Do you want to tell us why?
Well, because last week, Marcus...
While you were gone.
While I was gone, while I was away, young Marcus, riding high on his first time ever being right.
Yeah.
When he predicted that Marvel Comics had a surprise in store, an awesome surprise on the creative team for Black Panther.
Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Mm-hmm. Huge.
And I was
awesome.
Right.
He was right. He nailed it.
Yeah.
But, you know, last week he decided that he would declare that two longtime comic book writers were, in fact, has-beens. Those writers being Alan Moore.
Yep.
And Warren Ellis.
Yeah, you called Alan Moore a has-been. That's why you're an asshole.
I did call Alan Moore a has-been. And co-owner of Vault of Midnight, Steve Fodali.
Fourth podcast member of Super Skull in Absentia.
That's right.
Emeritus.
He was rattled this morning.
Yeah, he was pissed at you.
He was ready to talk about it.
Not only Steve, but we had some people write us some emails.
Yep.
We got some Facebook.
Yep.
I had a couple people come into the shop. The gist of what they all said is, what is this guy's problem? Meaning you, Marcus.
In my defense, I did have some people who were in solidarity with me.
Okay.
Other young know-nothings.
Did they provide any written evidence to this effect?
No, but all right. So here's, yes, I called Alan Moore has-been.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I defended myself today with Steve.
Yeah. And you're standing by it. You reject the asshole post.
It was a bold statement to make. I'll say that.
Here's the thing. You don't have to double down, just so you know.
No, I know I don't. But I'll say this.
Okay.
Alan Moore is a legend in comic books. Watchmen, V for Vendetta, From Hell, the early years of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Great comic books.
Promethea. Top 10.
Great books.
America's Best. He had a great run on Supreme, which is hard to admit, but true. He had a really good run on Wildcats.
Somehow.
That I loved very much. Somehow.
Yep.
And so, Nick, you went down the rabbit hole with me on this morning.
Yeah.
And my statement is that in the last 10 years, I don't really think Alan Moore's doing much. In fact, I will stand by that statement.
So if you're saying that in the last...
Decade,
which is a long time.
A long time.
He hasn't done a lot that I've enjoyed.
Or I would say most people have enjoyed.
Well, so some people have, and we've been hearing from
them. Right, we've been hearing from
them. Crossed 100. I haven't read Crossed 100.
I haven't either.
So I don't know about that one.
Might be good.
I did read Neonomicon. I didn't love it.
Okay.
But his current project, Providence, is also getting a fair amount of love.
Yeah. Again, I tried. I tried to dive into it. Do you read this, Curtis?
I haven't read any of it. No.
Read the first two.
Yeah. So, no. What you're saying is that he doesn't have a huge body of work recently that you like.
I mean, it's not recently. A decade is a long time.
Yeah. It's just tough to throw out the has-been word.
But I've said this, and I
that's a loaded insult.
But being a has-been means that you have done something noteworthy, and Alan Moore absolutely has. Watchmen is one of my favorite graphic novels of all time. I love his work.
Fat-ass comic.
It's a fat-ass comic. But part of my statement is rooted in the fact that he hasn't done anything in the last decade. The other part of my statement, and I know you agree with me on this, mm-hmm. Curtis,
go ahead.
Is that in the last 10 years, Alan Moore's stance on the comic industry and other comic creators has been negative and at some points assaulting to other comic creators.
Well, so me and Alan Moore have had a storied history. You know, I love him very much, and he's written some really big books that have, like we talked earlier, changed like kind of the course of all of comicdom.
Yeah.
It's a big, big talent. That said, in my younger days, many, many, many decades ago, I liked how cranky Alan Moore was. I liked his double-fisted fuck you to everybody.
Yeah.
But the older I get, the less I'm enamored of that. And so I will say that. But all that said, I mean, you know, Alan Moore, a lot of people still like him.
Absolutely. And, yeah. And more power to him.
And we can't stress enough, Marcus does not represent the views of Vault of Midnight or any Vault of Midnight affiliates. Certainly not Curtis Sullivan or Nick Wybar. He speaks for Marcus Schwimmer.
Yep, absolutely. And it actually puts me in a little bit of a weird situation.
No, it's good. You know, you're a loose cannon.
You're a loose cannon. And here's the thing, listeners. If you got a problem with that, there's a lot of comic book podcasts in the world. If you don't want to hear Marcus spout off at the mouth, you need to fucking subscribe somewhere else.
No, don't do that. We need you.
Pal.
Thanks for the support, Nick. But I will say that I acknowledge that... Saying he's a has-been was probably a little...
Yeah, that was extreme.
A little extreme.
That was way too much.
I do stand by the fact, though, that I think his work in the last decade has not followed this stuff. And I implore everyone, if you want to see a good example of what really ticks me off about Alan Moore, him and Jason Aaron had a back and forth a few years ago. And reading through that, I read through that a couple months ago when someone brought it to my attention, really changed my view on him as a comic creator and changed my understanding of what he views the comic industry, quote unquote, should be. Mm-hmm. So I implore people to read it. If you like Crossed 100, if you like Providence, if you think they're great books, more power to you. Comics is an entertainment art. People are going to have different opinions on what's good and what's bad.
Absolutely.
But and as for Warren Ellis, I said last week, and I stand by it. His book, Karnak, from last week is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I've reread it, and I don't often get the chance to reread books.
And we disagree on Trees.
And we disagree on Trees.
And I really liked Moon Knight.
Moon Knight was good.
And I said that last week. I think his superhero stuff that he's been putting out recently has been pretty darn good.
Weird as Supreme Blue Rose was, I thought it was cool.
That book did nothing. Either way, people have different opinions. I apologize if I offended anyone. I stand
by. That's a non-apology.
You're right.
I'm not saying you have to apologize, but you just know that's a bullshit apology.
Yeah, I stand by my fact that I don't think Alan Moore is putting out good stuff, and I think that sometimes his attitudes toward the comic industry can be pretty toxic.
He can be a cranky old fart.
For sure.
I think it's a little farther than that at this point.
Yeah.
So. Yes, I accept my asshole title, but I'm going to continue.
You accept it with grace and gusto, though.
You acquitted
yourself well here.
I'm going to keep saying what's on my mind, or else there's no point in doing it.
I think you should. Just do it, man.
And please read Crossed 100 and let me know.
I'm going to read it.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm going to check it out.
Let's read it together.
And I don't like Crossed.
Neither do I.
I don't like that book.
Nope.
That's like a filthy zombie book with like gratuitous bummer sex in it.
Yeah.
I do not like Crossed. And anyway, I'm going to read it. Sorry, Alan Moore, I guess. I'm going to apologize. Because I was on that podcast.
Yeah, I mean, my apologies. If I bummed anyone out or if I offended anyone.
Yeah, Marcus does. Marcus helps out with events at Vault of Midnight. Alan Moore, if you'd like to do a signing at Vault of Midnight anytime soon, we would love to have you pay for your own flight out, and we would take you out to a very nice appetizer-based dinner.
Based meal. Yeah.
Yep, like a half-off appetizer type situation.
And we would love to have you. You can tell Marcus what is wrong with him. That would be great, actually.
I'd actually be down for that.
Yeah.
So let's move on to our citizen question this week before wrapping things up. We're going to... what I propose, gentlemen, is I'm going to read the citizen question. Maybe we'll just get Curtis's take on it.
Let's do it.
Because Marcus and I spouted off of the mouth about this last week. Travis asks and states, not infrequently, I see news stories about long-established, often venerated comic shops closing after decades of operation because, quote, business is bad, unquote. What's going on here? From my perspective, it seems like business is great for Vault of Midnight. Can you speculate on why some stores seem to be booming at the same time that others bust? Are there trade secrets you found to keep your stores successful? Curtis.
There's so many.
Go.
So we'll do it really fast because we talked about this last week. So don't sell comics unless you're deeply in love with it. If you want to have a job that makes you money and is easy, don't do specialty niche retail. It's a tough gig. That said, if you really, really love comic books, then by all means, jump in both feet to the comic retailing world. There's so many things that put a business under, and not just comic books. So one of my favorite all-time comic book stores I won't name, they had been around for almost 20 years. They lost their manager who graduated college. He moved on and got a job in his field. The lease of their business came up. The new owners of the building doubled the rent. Boom, comic shop gone 20 years later.
And this isn't necessarily a failing on the business or any, you know, we talk a lot of shit about a lot of comic stores and their choices a lot, but this is just bad luck of the draw.
Yeah.
Lose a good manager, rent goes up.
Yep, you get a new landlord, property sells out from under you.
No more comic shop.
Our previous location, the building was sold while we were still a tenant.
Mm-hmm.
And that caused us to rapidly have to find a new location.
And if you didn't find that would have been it for Vault of Midnight.
It was almost it. It was very close.
Ago.
It was, 90 days from no more Vault of Midnight after, 12 years of business or whatever. So there's that kind of stuff. And there's you have no control over that unless you own your property. Almost no retailers own their property. That's a very small percentage of small business. Mm-hmm. So you're at the mercy of the gatekeepers, if you will. And then we talked about this a little bit with the top 300 and stuff. You got to know your product. And if we haven't trend surfed as a store over the years. We do get involved occasionally with things that are coming up. Or, you know, we started carrying board games 10 years ago because we saw that there was a market there. But, you know, we don't do stuff like pop vinyl, for example. I'll single out pop vinyl. That is a thing that people like. It's cool. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to talk about how I don't like pop vinyl, but it's something that we see as more of a trend. And it will have its time where it's no longer with us. And what is the product that replaces that product? Where are the sales after that? Maybe it's another trend. And people are good at that. And that is a thing that happens. It happens in retail across the board, big and small.
But the alternative, maybe, and what we try to do is give a shit about something instead of the trend, get behind that,
yes,
and try to grow that from our enthusiasm and passion for it.
Absolutely.
Like, we got into board games, started selling board games. Yes, we could see that the writing was on the wall and people were starting to get into it.
Right.
But then we went whole hog into becoming obsessed with board games.
Yes, and making playing it them and liking them.
Yeah, and making it a staple of the place.
Now, Curtis, one thing I like to hear you talk about, and I think the listeners would agree, is you often talk about the experience you want people to have when they come into Vault of Midnight. And I've been to a lot of comic shops. Vault of Midnight has a pretty unique feel, and that's by design.
Yeah.
What is it that you think works with the design that you've set up for Vault for the customer experience?
Well, we've always just attacked it from, like, the place of it being... The place is as important as the stuff. So, I mean, that's just the people that work there got to be great. The music's got to be great. All the lights got to work. All that's as important as the books we sell. And we talk about this when we talk about the numbers. You know, the big two dominate the market in almost every shop. And you wonder if retailers are putting enough effort into finding the quality books and getting behind them.
So Secret Wars is gone. It's delayed for 2 months.
Yep.
What do you do? Do you give up?
You do not.
Do you show them a new book? Do you hand them Wild's End?
Do you hand sell the product in your store that you really believe in and are very confident in?
And are you confident and passionate about anything in your store?
Yes.
And I think to prove this, like, Curtis is a great example of just the amount of time and energy you have to put in to being able to do that with enthusiasm and confidence. Curtis, how many comics do you think you read a week?
So many. Yeah. 50, 70.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. A lot. And we all do. And that's because we sell comics. You know, if I go to a coffee shop and the guy behind the counter says he hates coffee, that's not a good sign. Mm-hmm. You know, I want a fishmonger who eats fish. That's just how it works. So, you know, getting back to the Secret Wars thing, you know, Secret Wars is out and we're down as an industry 8% or something in single issue sales. Vault of Midnight was up, 12% month on month, year on year. And that's because when Secret Wars isn't there, we have other really good product to sell. We talk about it all the time. The breadth and width of comics right now is insane. There is no shortage of great product to sell. If you're a retailer who's putting your heart and soul into it, you've got books. You got books for days. You got more books than people can buy. Mm-hmm. So it's tricky. There's so many factors. I could go on and on about it, but there's just a million things.
I'll never forget the shop that we visited out west in a city that we'll just say is, we'll just pretend that it was in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't in Las Vegas, Nevada.
That was a crazy store.
And the dude said, and we saw a lot of shops. I think we visited damn near every comic shop.
11 shops or something.
And one of the dudes, we asked him about something. He's like, I just sell them. I don't read them.
That was his first quip.
And I'll just never forget it for the rest of my life.
Super intense.
Dude had been in business for a long time. He had a shop. He had a roof over his head. Mm-hmm. Paying rent.
It's very, very
I just
strange.
Sell them. I don't read them.
No, get into the game if it's your vocation, if you love it. There's no reason to get into a specialty type business unless you're going to put your whole heart into it.
Yep.
And then you throw in all the other factors, your rents and your landlords and your utilities and everything else.
And like you said, a lot of people do, and then they go out of business anyway because shit happens, and that's tragic.
Yeah. Somebody buys your building.
Yep.
And you're paying $3,000 a month, and they say, well, starting next week, it will be $6,000 a month. Yeah.
So if there's a secret, it's
Lots of luck.
Yep.
So we think we're really, really good at our jobs. We've been very, very lucky. We've dodged a couple crazy death of the business bullets in the 20 years we've been around. So, you know, it's not all raw skill. So there you go.
Yep. All right. Well, we are being ejected from the building. This is our second podcast today. Gentlemen, very well done.
Yeah, I hope so.
The both of you.
Turned out great.
This is where heroes were born.
That's right.
Today.
The last podcast we recorded, though, that got erased was the best podcast we ever did.
Yep.
This is a tribute.
In memoriam. And on that note, we end another issue of Super Skull, the Vault of Midnight podcast. A very special thanks to the Ann Arbor District Library and the Freedom Shrine Studio. I'm sure this studio has a real name, but I don't know what it is. You can hear us every Thursday wherever podcasts are found. Our music was created by A-Bomb. Our logo was designed by Philip Wong. Our producer is the wonderful Rachel Polk. Make sure that you follow us on Twitter and Instagram. At Super Skull Show is the name of the account.
Very good.
Check out our website, superskullshow.com. Send us questions. We're going to answer them. Please go to iTunes. You hear this on every single podcast in the world. Please go to iTunes and leave us a review. It really, really helps us out, and it helps people find the show. It only takes a minute, and we really, really appreciate it. Super Skull is brought to you by Vault at Midnight, Earth's finest comic books and stuff and podcasts since 1996. My name is Nick Wybar.
I'm Marcus Schwimmer.
And I'm Curtis Silva.
Wishing you very good reading. Until next. What are you doing on your fucking phone over there?
Sauce.
Just getting some shit for the
Kim Kardashian.
Just call me Kardashian.
I called you Kim Kardashian because you're looking at your phone.
And Kim Kardashian's the only fucking person who does that.
Yeah, she loves her phone.
Maybe she does, maybe she doesn't.
You one of the
know.
Many things
maybe
that you have.
Call Kim, ask what's up.
Marcus knows about the Kardashians, don't forget. So
we only communicate by post.
Kim Kardashian doesn't know how to use US Mail.
Me and Double K.
US what?
U.S. mail.
What's this mail that you speak of? Emails.
No, the post.